What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Two Stripes Podcast, the 8th ranked podcast on iTunes that has stripes in its name. My name is Colton Denning, and I am your host, and I hope you all are having a great Friday. It is Friday, March 3rd, out here in beautiful Boulder, Colorado, 70 degrees. Hopefully it's as nice or nicer wherever you are right now. Hope everybody has great plans for the weekend and that you can kick off your weekend by getting your college football fix in by listening to the Two Stripes Podcast. Have a pretty good show for you guys today that I think you're really going to enjoy. Before I get into that, though, one small housekeeping item from last week's show. No matter who I talk to on this show, the one common theme is that these people are taking time out of their day to talk to me. And in most cases, these are people that I've never spoken with before. Maybe I've interacted with them on Twitter a little bit, but for the most part, in a lot of these cases, I've never talked to these people before, and I'm sending out cold emails to get in touch with them, and they are gracious enough to take their time out of their day to talk with me and help somebody that they don't know fulfill what they want to do in college football and audio. So I'm always very appreciative of that and want to say thank you to Billy Gomila of And the Valley Shook for last week after we did our show. He was kind enough to put the audio embed, the SoundCloud embed, in one of the posts for And the Valley Shook, and it led to the highest listenership ever in the short history of this show. So something that Billy didn't have to do, but something that I am very thankful and appreciative of. So Billy, whether you're listening or not, definitely want to say thank you. That was really cool, and I really appreciate that, and helped a lot of new people find the show. And if you found the show and you like the show, or if you've been listening to the show, it would be very helpful if you go on iTunes, search Two Stripes Podcast, and subscribe, review, leave comments, leave feedback. That is the best way for new people to find the show, and more importantly, for you guys to leave feedback for me so I can figure out what to do to make this show the best it can be for you, the college football fan. With that out of the way, let's get into this week's show. On Wednesday, I had the chance to speak with Cam Underwood, the managing editor of stateoftheu.com, SB Nation's Miami Hurricanes website. Miami football's been in the wilderness here for a little bit. We've seen this with other schools, Florida State up until Jimbo Fisher and their recent success. You know, after in those last Bobby Bowden years, kind of was out there. Michigan, outside of the 1 year with Brady Hoke in 2011, they've really struggled until Jim Harbaugh came 2 years ago, and they've reasserted themselves back up on the map. And Miami is one of those teams, and it's been that way for, it feels like, almost a decade or even longer since those glory days of the early 2000s. And now that Mark Richt is at the helm of the Hurricanes, it seems like they're poised for a breakthrough. And in 2016, they went 9-4 in his first year, got some positive recruiting momentum with the class of 2017. Currently, their 2018 class is, I want to say, second in the 24/7 sports composite, and they're on pace to have a very good class and kind of reassert themselves among the college football elite. So I got the chance to talk with Cam and discuss some of these things, and he assessed Mark Richt's first year on the job and how he would grade that, the direction of the program going forward, why Miami's defensive line and their front seven as a whole is so good, and why it's important for those guys to play at a very high level again next season with a new secondary. And we also talked about the Noles a little bit. We talked about the mental hurdle that it is for Miami to beat Florida State, and since it's been 7 straight years that FSU has won in that rivalry game, and there's been more than a couple that have been in pretty gut-wrenching fashion for Miami, including 2016's game, Cam broke down why that game is so important and why it is a mental hurdle for Miami that they need to get over to get back among the upper crust of college football. So a lot of good nuggets in this episode. And just from talking to Cam, you can tell that Miami fans are hungry. They are very hungry to get to that place in college football, where they were in 1999, 2000, 2001, and then, of course, the glory days in the 80s as well. So I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. Let's get right into it. Here's Cam Underwood from stateoftheu.com. All right, and joining me now on the Two Stripes podcast is the managing editor of stateoftheu.com. His name is Cam Underwood. Cam, what's going on today, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm really good. Excited to talk some Miami Hurricanes football and, just hop on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. I appreciate you joining, and I'm excited to hear kind of the insider's view on how Miami is, and we might as well just jump right into it. So last year, Mark Richt takes over. First season, Miami goes 9-4. They finished 14th in S&P Plus. And you look at the prior 4 years for Miami, they had finished 47th, 21st, 38th, and 51st. So definitely the best on field that Miami has looked. Outside of how the record was and just how they looked on the field, what does Mark Richt bring to that program that maybe they didn't have with a guy like Al Golden or Randy Shannon? And how would you rate his first season down there in Miami?
All right, so there's a couple of things with that. First of all, Mark Richt brings respectability and authenticity, I want to say, to the head coaching position that was just absent. Everybody, myself included, wanted Randy Shannon to be elevated from defensive coordinator to head coach. And, well, we were just wrong. He wasn't that kind of a guy. You see that he's had position coach jobs at other places, not gotten another look as a head coach. He's now the defensive coordinator at the University of Florida, but it's taken him many years, almost a decade, to get up to being a DC again because his time as head coach deteriorated his stock, if you will, as a head coach so much. Al Golden, plain and simple, was a great guy. I met him a couple of times through, a bunch of events like the jersey unveiling, the Adidas thing a couple of years ago, some other events around times where I was able to meet him. So he's a good person, a good family man. He was there for the players when Malcolm Lewis got injured on the field at Georgia Tech with a nasty, nasty dislocated ankle. There's a famous picture of him, of Al Golden, who sprinted out and he's holding Malcolm Lewis's helmet. When Hunter Knighton had heat stroke during fall practice a couple years ago, was with him. When Marcus Gayo had a neck injury from a hit in practice, was supposed to have immediate availability. I believe it was his weekly teleconference call. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I have an immediate thing I need to do. He didn't say at time what those injuries were, but that fact was borne out that he really cared about his players. He was there for his team and wanted to do a really good job. But I think that the job was simply just too big for him. He did a good job shepherding us through the cloud, as he called it, of the NCAA sanctions. But on field, X's and O's, recruiting, there was just much to be desired still. Even, again, with him being a good guy, it just wasn't good enough for our program. So Mark Richt is a clear upgrade at the head coaching position. Upgrades pretty much across the board at every position, coach. Miami now is spending more money or gave more money to Mark Richt to build out his assistant coaching staff than they did with either Randy Shannon or Mark Richt or even, any of the coaches prior to that. So, yeah, just really an authenticity to the position of head coach and really just a grounding of this program, not necessarily looking like an Al Golden or Randy Shannon. Hey, I wonder what I would do to be successful as a head coach. Mark Richt is a proven guy, 15 years at Georgia, his first year at Miami. So everybody knows him. He's a household name, a known commodity. So there's that for the first part of your question. The second question was, what would I grade Mark Richt's first season in 2016 with the Hurricanes? I would give it a solid B, maybe a B plus. Really just got back to playing Miami Hurricanes football, bringing in Manny Diaz as a defensive coordinator, changing the defensive scheme. Miami's defensive line was eighth in havoc ranking, and that's an advanced stat from Bill Connolly at SB Nation, one of my tangential colleagues. So basically, the defensive line got in the backfield, made tackles for loss, sacks, things of that nature, and really just was flying around looking like a Miami Hurricanes team should look, in my estimation. 9 wins on the year, could have had 10 or more. That damn Florida State game that I was there for, that one hurt really bad. Just because you want to beat them every year, that's the biggest rivalry game on our schedule. I was also at that Notre Dame game, which is the worst loss of the year. And I don't know if I'm stealing your thunder with other things, but I think that it was a solid season. There's still definitely room for improvement. Obviously, we lost 4 times, all of those in a row in October, which was terrible, in that you don't want to have a losing streak, or you don't really want to lose 4 games. in a college football season, you want to have less losses than that. But righted the ship, won our last four or five, I want to say, you know, got things going in a positive direction, had a strong recruiting year, not elite, you know, like some other teams, Florida State or Ohio State or Alabama, not to that level, but, you know, having a top 15 class is a positive first step, especially with recruiting looking like it's going to trend up in 2018. So, yeah, just to, if that's too long, didn't read kind of stuff. Authenticity is what Mark Richt brought to the position of head coach at the University of Miami, grounding this program and a B-plus overall for the Canes season.
You brought up the FSU game, and I want to get into that dynamic here in a little bit, but something you also brought up was how well the defensive line played and how Mark Richt was able to bring in some talented assistants. And Craig Kulikowski is a guy that if you follow college football and in the SEC and in the Big 12, he was a guy that was at Mizzou for 15 seasons, coached some of the most badass dudes in college football for a while. You can go down the list, Alden Smith, Michael Sam when he was winning SEC Defensive Player of the Year, Shane Ray, a lot of talented guys. He comes to Miami, and like you said, they're top 10 in havoc rate. They finish 8th nationally in tackles for loss and 22nd in sacks. With so many guys back on that defensive line coming in from last season's team, which had a great year, and a lot of young guys, what is it possible even for them to take another step forward because they were already so good? And how important is it for that defensive line to play with that same level when you have so many new guys coming back in or not coming back in the defensive secondary?
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going to go with that. The defensive line up front, the only guy who we lost was Cortell Jenkins, who was a rotational guy at defensive tackle because he wanted more playing time. He's originally from New Jersey. You know, so he's looking to transfer somewhere where he can go play more. He'll probably have to sit out this next season, but still going closer to home or something like that, something he's going to look at. But that means that every other contributing guy on the defensive line is back. And we added in DJ Johnson from Sacramento, California, who was the most offered high school recruit in America last cycle with 100 scholarship offers, who's a four-star guy at 6'5", 240, and ran a 10.6 in the 100. Think about that for a second. Then we have Jonathan Garvin, a four-star from Lake Worth in South Florida, who had somewhere between 18 and 25 sacks in his senior season, depending on who you look at, and his opening game against a FBS caliber quarterback in James Blackman, who's going to FSU, John Garvin had 7 sacks and a pick 6. And then you bring in John Ford from Dillard High School, who's a defensive tackle. He's an athletic kind of guy. He's 6'5", 270 right about now, so he might have some development. But he's also a 3-star, borderline 4-star guy. So you lose a rotational guy, and you bring in 3 standouts to join that group. This defensive line is going to be good. This defensive line is a top 5, probably top 3 defensive line in America. And I know people are going to listen to this and say, whoa, this is a myopic look at the things. This is, you know, I went to the University of Miami, full disclosure. You know, I write about the University of Miami. Obviously, I manage a site for this, you know, team. But I'm not just saying this to say this. Like, I've talked to other guys from other schools. I've talked to guys from other conferences. Miami's defensive line, and then even in my own estimation, this line is really, really good. Chad Thomas was a 5-star 3 years ago. He's going to be a senior. He's 6'6", 265 at D end. You have Joe Jackson, who's a freshman All-American. For my money, the best true freshman defensive end in America this last cycle. Had 8.5 sacks as a true freshman. You got Gerald Willis, who's a 5-star, transferred in from Florida. You have Kendrick Norton and RJ McIntosh starting on the inside at D-tackle, and all 4 starting guys should be NFL draft picks, and all 4 of those being Chad Thomas at one end, Norton's and Jenkins inside, and Joe Jackson on the other end. In their draft-eligible year, when they go, those guys are all going to be top 3-round picks, probably top 2-round picks because they have that kind of talent. So I say that to say, you know, if the defensive line was top 10 last year, there's definitely room for improvement to step up where they can be top 5, top 3, and really just stifle teams, really just shut them down. And they have the depth that we have 10 or 11 guys, so you can play 2 or 3 lines where you're rotating in top-tier level guys more often than not and keep that production kind of going. Now, spinning that forward for Miami, that will be important because, like you said, leading into this question, the defensive secondary is the exact opposite of the defensive line. So where everybody except for one guy returns up front, nobody returns in the secondary. Corn Elder, probably going to be a second-round draft pick. He's gone. Jamal Carter at the combine this week, he's gone. Rayshon Jenkins, also the combine, he's gone. And then Adrian Colbert, who's a grad transfer from Texas. He's gone. So we do have some guys who have some experience in that secondary. Malik Young is was a freshman last year, going to be a sophomore, made some great strides. Sheldrick Redwine, Jaquan Johnson at a safety. But, yeah, there's a lot of questions on that defensive secondary. So hopefully to help them out and not have them covering man-to-man for 7 seconds, which, you know, obviously I would want our defensive coaches not to put them in that kind of situation anyway. But if the defensive front can create pressure up front, that makes everybody else's job easier.
So you brought it up earlier, and unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about the Noles. Oh. I know we all hate doing it, unless you're a Nole fan. But right. Florida State won the last 7 in this rivalry, and 2 of the last 3 seasons, including last year, Miami has dropped the last 3 games after that one, after losing to Florida State. Is that a mindset, and how important is it for Mark Richt and the program to get over that proverbial hump ASAP, or is that much ado about nothing, or is that a psychological thing that Miami's really going to have to get over to reach that next level, is to beat Florida State?
I would say that it's something that we have to get over, because, like you said, when we have lost to Florida State, especially recently, and yeah, obviously 7 in a row, all that stuff, but in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, that has come with a hangover. So it's not just, you know, the old adage of don't let one game beat you twice. The Florida State game has not beaten us twice. It's beaten us 3, 4, 5 times in a row, because there has been no recovery from that. So you saw that this year. We lost that close game 20-19, had that extra point blocked. And I was sitting in the end zone in the third row where that kick happened, almost right behind DeMarcus Walker, who blocked that kick. So I was like right down front. So I saw that happen. And no, that hurts. But we can't let that, well, in 2016, we did let that continue to affect our play after that. Lost to Virginia Tech on a Thursday night, and we just got ambushed. That was probably our worst performance of the year. Lost to North Carolina, which was a close game. Lost to Notre Dame, which was a close game, but a pretty terrible loss in my estimation. But yeah, the Florida State hangover has been a real thing. And I've seen, you know, Bud Elliott, my colleague from Tomahawk Nation, said, you know, Florida State's going to have to pay rent for the space that they're occupying, but, you know, in Miami's head. And that's just what it's been. So I want, obviously, to beat our rival, and I want that to happen now. And I think that it's important for everything of the program to continue moving forward. If you're talking about recruiting, if you're talking about on-field performance, you know, if you beat Florida State, if we beat Florida State last year, there's a very good chance that we could have been in the ACC championship game. You know, things like that. We would have needed to win another game, but there's more to the Florida State game than just one game. And if you talk to everybody on either side, like, you're going to get some of the people on the outside who say, well, every game is just a game. Yeah, but it's not. I mean, I'm a native Michigander, and I grew up going to the University of Michigan Stadium. And I hate Ohio State like nobody else. And I understand that. I do. There's 3 teams that I root for in a given week. It's Miami number 1, Michigan number 2, and whoever plays Ohio State number 3, because I hate them. And I know that I'm on, you know, your podcast and you're a fan. But I know that that's a reciprocal kind of thing for you. So
absolutely.
Right. So you understand when I say there's a specific game on the schedule that matters more. I know that you understand that. And so that's where I come from talking about rivalries. I know that this game, this Florida State game, matters more. And you've seen that borne out on the field when we have done poorly the last 7 years in a row. Yes, obviously. But especially these last 3 or 4, when we've done poorly against them, when the result has been negative for the Miami Hurricanes, that has continued into, you know, the rest of the season or part of the season, depending on when that game is. So, yeah, this year, really, I want to see Miami get a win. I know it's going to be tough. I know that Florida State's a good team. I know that they're stacked on, you know, all sides of the ball. I know that it's been, you know, 7 years since we beat them. I know all of those things, but I really want to see that happen to take a stride forward for the program. And Manny Diaz, our defensive coordinator, who's a Miami native, he came back here and he, you know, coordinated our defense, which took leaps and bounds forwards last year. And when he got the job, when he was hired as defensive coordinator, somebody asked him about beating Florida State. They asked him about, you know, recruiting and what the talent is like. And he pulled no punches. He said, and I quote, if we recruit you here to the University of Miami and you lose 4 years in a row to Florida State, that means we made a mistake in recruiting you. I mean, like, if that doesn't tell you what this game is about, I don't know what will. That means that we need somebody to go out there and make a play to win this game. In 2016, we fought back to have a chance to tie, got that extra point blocked. In 2015, it was close for a while, and then they pulled away a little bit. In 2014, we had that game. Braxton and Berrios drops a would-be touchdown. We have another touchdown that would have been dropped, would-be touchdown dropped. There was a penalty call that was bullshit, basically, and then another thing, and all of a sudden, everything turned, and we let that game get away from us. So it's not been a bunch of blowouts, and I think that's something that it's a moral victory on one side, but it also hurts a little bit more on the other side, because for 5 of the last 7 years, it's been a touchdown 10-point game, you know? So it's not like they're just blowing our doors off or anything. So it's, I mean, there was a couple years in there where, all right, yep, they're way better than us, and okay, they proved it and beat us by 4 touchdowns, but every other time, it's 10 points or less, and it's seeing those couple of plays or those little itty-bitty things that could turn the tide, and I'm hopeful that, you know, now seeing Mark Richt being here, now getting Miami-caliber players, Miami-caliber classes, Miami-caliber speed, all these things that I want Miami to have, getting those on this team, I want to see that come to fruition where we now are able to beat Florida State.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring up the Michigan thing, too, because they're in a similar position with Ohio State, having lost the last 5 and similar to Miami losing this year's game in pretty gut-wrenching fashion, too. They need to get pumping. If you look down into the SEC, LSU and Alabama, LSU's kind of been in that same position where every year they've gone into that game since 2012, and they've at least had a shot at still, you know, winning the SEC West, and they've lost to Bama, and then their season, for lack of a better term, has just kind of gone off the rails. So it's interesting to look around college football and see that LSU, Miami, and Michigan are at that point where, you know, they definitely, and in Miami's case now too, they have the talent there. It's just a matter of getting over that hump. But getting into the offense, I think the easy thing from the outside to talk about is seeing Brad Kyle leave. You see a 3-year starter go, and what's Miami going to do? And we'll get into that. But you look at the rest of the offense. They lose Stacy Coley at receiver. They lose David Njoku, who's going to be a high draft pick, probably a first rounder in the NFL draft at tight end. And then Joseph Yerby, who was able to contribute a lot at running back. But still have a lot of weapons. And the two guys in particular that stood out to me is Mark Walton, the running back, had an excellent sophomore season. And then Amon Richards, the freshman receiver, I want to say he averaged over 19 yards per catch, only had 49 catches and almost 1,000 yards. Just how good are those two guys? How much are they going to have to carry? And what are some of the other players to look out for on this offense besides those two?
Yeah, those two are a great place to start. Mark Walton was the backup as a freshman behind Joe Yerby, and then as a sophomore, usurped Joe Yerby as a starting running back. If you watch that Appalachian State game, App State tried to hit him with a kill shot, a diving kind of tackle, hitting that square kind of thing on the old defunct NCAA football game. And Mark Walton shrugged off the linebacker and said, okay, cool, there's a wide open hole. I'm going to take it 80 yards for a touchdown. A multifaceted player. He's 5'9", about 207 pounds right now. Could have been a 4-star wide receiver coming out of high school. Really talented catching the ball as well. So I looked at him as something maybe next year that we can do is engage Mark Walton more as a receiver, both out of the backfield and maybe in the slot, because he has those movement skills and that kind of catching ability, receiving ability, excuse me. So he's going to be a key player, obviously, and in a Mark Richt offense, he likes to run the ball, and Mark Walton is our kind of bell cow right now. He's our starting running back, so look for him to be a guy that, you know, if you play college fantasy sports, maybe you look at Mark Walton early in the year, definitely. Amon Richards, first-team All-American, freshman All-American. You can make the argument that he was the true freshman of the year, came in from Wellington High School, and the kid is just the truth. He started from day one after Lawrence Cager, he was a player who was going to start basically in front of Richards. He went down. Cager is with a knee injury, and so Richards had to take over the whole season, and you saw what he could do. He's a dynamic talent, and he's a kid who works hard. He does what he needs to do, and you see that borne out on the field. He's 6'2", he's faster than you think he is. Looking both at this year against West Virginia when he scored that touchdown to open the scoring for Miami, also his high school highlights, he was the destroyer of pursuit angles. He's a long strider, but he's fast, and he's just good. I think that he's destined, hopefully, if everything goes right, to be a 3 years and a first round draft pick into the NFL. So Amon Richards is an elite talent. We recruited him away from Alabama, wanted him at the end. He was committed to Miami, decommitted when we fired Al Golden, recommitted a little bit later. in the process on signing day. So that was a huge get for us. So, and that's a Miami caliber player. And that's what I'm talking about with the Stacy Coley, who is a much ballyhooed recruit, who's going to be an NFL draft pick. Amon Richards had that same kind of cachet. So really good to have him on the roster. As I look at the roster for next season, right quick, a couple of guys, non-quarterback division, because I know we're going to circle back to that in a second, but a couple other guys for you to look at on the offensive side of the ball. Chris Herndon, the fourth, plays tight end. He was the co-starter with David Njoku, so look for him to get targeted maybe a little bit more. Not the athletic freak that David Njoku is, because like there's only but 10 or 12 of those kind of people walking around the face of the earth, but Chris Herndon had 2 touchdowns in the spring game last year. He's a big kid. He can move really well. He's from North Cross, Georgia, 6'4", about 255. But he's not lumbering, so he can do it all. So you've seen him move around between fullback, H-back, tight end, even a little bit in the slot when we've had both of them in. And we could do this multiplicity kind of thing, because with Njoku and Herndon on the field, you never knew where both of those guys were going to line up because they were so versatile. So looking at him as somebody who can be an impact player. Also at the running back position, a sophomore, Travis Homer from West Palm Beach, Florida. He's a guy who didn't really have many carries last year because you had Joe Yearby, who's going to the NFL draft. You have Gus Edwards, who is now transferring to Rutgers. It was announced yesterday, I want to say, in front of him, and Mark Walton and Trayon Gray. Well, Trayon Gray was out with a knee injury, but he's back in the mix. But yeah, so Travis Homer as a freshman was fourth string. So he only got a couple of carries. He had a fumble in the FAU game, which kind of negated him getting further carries. But this is a dynamic kid. He's very fast. He's very athletic. He's seen making big tackles on special teams all the time last year. Runs a legit 4.440. He's an explosive guy. You watch his high school highlights, and he had a 99-yard touchdown, which is his school record. He had a couple 97-yard touchdowns, a couple 95, and a screen pass he took for 90. So you're looking at 7 or 8 90-plus-yard touchdowns as a high school senior. And I say that to say that shows his explosive abilities as a player on the field, both as a receiver and as a running back. So I really look for Travis Homer to take that running back 2 job and really be that counterpoint to Mark Walton, who is very good, but he's not a breakout kind of speedster, but Travis Homer is. So that's who I would say at the skill positions. And then also we have Mike Harley from St. Thomas Aquinas down here in Fort Lauderdale, and Jeff Thomas from East St. Louis, Illinois, 2 of the fastest wide receivers in the 2017 recruiting class. So they're both signed to come on down to the U. So both of those guys are going to play big roles early because we need their speed. We need their playmaking ability. And they should also be able to help in the return game. So, yeah, I would go with those 4 guys as other guys to watch. And hopefully, you know, we're going to be putting some points up.
Well, and just as a side note, too, like I remember when Braxton Berrios was killing kids at the opening like 4 years ago, and now he's going to be a senior. And like I'm just looking at the depth chart right now, and it's crazy how fast this goes and how some of these guys will get replaced on the depth chart and whatnot. So that's just a little aside, because I remember Berrios coming up. But getting into quarterback, like I mentioned, Brad Kaya gone, and not a lot of game experience behind him that's still left on the depth chart, other than Malik Rozier making 1 start in 2015. No other player at that quarterback position right now that's going to fight for that job has made a start. You got a couple of blue chip guys. One's a redshirt freshman, another true freshman. What's the outlook for Miami right now at quarterback heading into spring?
It's wide open. And Mark Rick said that he's not going to make a decision anytime soon. There's no front runner coming into the competition right now, which is kind of a shot at the guys who are already on campus, because he said if anybody has separated themselves as being, you know, the clear backup or the clear potential starter for 2017 in the previous year, then they would have the leg up. But nobody did that, Rozier included. So it's wide open. There are 5 names to know. One is Malik Rozier, who started that infamous game at Duke in 15, that win that was controversial for a number of reasons that I will not get into now. But hey, whatever. If you want, you can go look up the YouTube of the last. But hey, go YouTube it. Just put Miami Duke the Return. You're welcome. also with him is Vincent Testaverde, Vinny Testaverde's son. He's a walk-on because, you know, Vinny Testaverde's rich, so he's just paying his tuition. He doesn't have to take up a scholarship. Also a redshirt sophomore is Evan Sheriffs from Jefferson, Georgia, high school valedictorian of his class coming out a couple of years ago. So a very bright individual. So maybe the ability to pick up the playbook would be something he can excel at. Also, Jack Allison, a redshirt freshman from Palmetto, Florida. He's the prototype looking guy, 6'5", about 205 pounds, and has an absolute rifle for an arm. Very, very good. Six names. Cade Weldon is an early enrollee. That is Casey Weldon's son, Casey Weldon, who was coached by Mark Richt at FSU, Heisman Trophy runner-up to Desmond Howard in 1992. So his son is on campus already. And then Nikosi Perry from Ocala Vanguard High School is a four-star recruit also. He is not going to be an early enrollee, so he's still in high school right now, but he will be on campus in May, competing for the starting quarterback job. If you're looking for or wondering why we brought him in, Nikosi Perry broke records that stood for 20 years at Ocala Vanguard that were set by Dante Culpepper, who was, you know, first team all NFL a couple of times with the Minnesota Vikings, get your roll on kind of stuff. So those are the six names to know. It's really just even. Somebody has to step up and perform. So full disclosure, I want the best player. So whoever performs the best is the guy who I want to start for Miami. I don't want to play favorites. Whoever goes out and earns the job. All of that being said, my personal preference as we sit here now is Nikosi Perry. Has a cannon for an arm. He's 6'4". He's very thin. He's only about 178, 180 pounds. But he's mobile. He's not a running quarterback like a Mike Vick, who's kind of one read and go. He will definitely digest what the defense is going to give him. And he scrambles to look to throw, but he can run when he needs to. He's just the kind of guy that Mark Richt wants to run the offense. All of the reports from pretty much everybody last recruiting cycle was that Nikosi Perry was not the number one quarterback on the board. He was the number one player on Mark Richt's recruiting board, bar none, out of anybody in America. So that gives you the status of knowing, okay, out of anybody else, any other recruit possible, we want this kid. And he plays a premium position where you're only going to play one person at a time. And, you know, that's the face of a franchise, the face of a team. So if Mark Richt is so sold on this kid, I'm just going to go in sight unseen because I trust Mark Richt. And I have seen him. Him at a camp. I've also seen him at or on, you know, highlight videos and things like that. My comparison for him on National Signing Day was Marcus Mariota, not necessarily saying that Nikosi Perry is going to be the exact same, but has similar traits. We have a coach on our writing staff at State of the U, and he did a nice breakdown video and spoke to some other people about that comparison, and he did some pros and cons for that. But I think that's the kind of ceiling that Nikosi Perry has. I think he has a higher ceiling than anybody else. He might not have as high a floor for like the early season as maybe a Jack Allison, as maybe a Cade Weldon, who might be a little bit more game ready as we're talking right now. But yeah, if I got to pick, I want Nikosi Perry. I think he's going to be the guy. I think for the next 3 or 4 years, come in, solidify that position. And I understand that by having a true freshman come in and with five other guys either at or above, ahead of him in, you know, their chronology in pop college, you're probably going to lose one or two guys from this group. But yeah, for me right now, I want Nikosi Perry. But if there's another guy who steps up and is just demonstrably better than everybody else, I'm going to ride with them.
Well, and with Mark Richt's history, it stands to reason that probably one of those guys is going to step up and at least give them solid quarterback play. But last one, and I'll get you out of here. With Richt really having his first full season, he doesn't have to worry about hiring assistants or getting used to the job or any of that other stuff that comes with coming into a new job, despite how well he's known Miami over the years. All of that's taken care of. Miami's recruiting better. Their 2018 class looks like right now it's going to be pretty awesome. What do you think the expectations are for 2017? And then secondly, what's the ceiling for this Miami team under Richt in the next 5 or 7 years? Is it getting back to winning national championships? Is it a playoff appearance every couple of years? Where does that stand?
Yeah, 2017, I think that everything is, there's rose-colored glasses right now. This was the first time with the bowl win this year, the first time since 2006 with the now defunct Micron MPC Bowl victory over Nevada. And I want to say Colin Kaepernick back then when he was in college. So yeah, think about that, how long that's been. So yeah, there's optimism in the offseason unlike any time recently, just because for the last decade, we have not ended the season with a win, no matter what game that was in. So that is something that I think is spinning forward. I am very optimistic about 2017. Looking at our schedule, there are winnable games. There are lots of winnable games. It's maybe not a season that sets up for an undefeated season, but you could easily count your way to 10 or 11 wins, including a bowl game in the 2017 season. So and you want to see a continual step forward. So 8-5 in 2005, 2015, 9-4 last year. So you're looking for 10 or more wins, which makes sense for the forward progression of a program. You definitely want to see that kind of a performance. So that's what I'm personally hoping for. The ceiling at Miami is always national championships. And I'm like, this is completely biased because, yeah, it is. And I was a freshman at the U in the year 2000 where we got robbed because they put Florida State in the national championship game instead of us, and we beat them head-to-head. But then, you know, the 2001 Miami Hurricanes are the best college football team ever, so I was there for that and had classes with guys like Santana Moss and Najee Davenport and Chris Myers, who's an offensive lineman. So I was very close to those teams. And I think that maybe not the 2001 team, but a national championship, those are the kind of things that is that's the all-the-time ceiling for Miami. Now, are we going to be able to get that ceiling? That is really the question. You know, the other coaches, maybe a Randy Shannon, a Mark Richt, an Al Golden, those are guys who were not able to approach that ceiling, but that did not change the fact that that is where the ceiling for this program lies. So, you know, if we do what we need to do, we find a way to win some tough games, because to be a champion, you have to get a little bit of luck. You have to win some tough games. You've got to win a little bit more in the recruiting battles because, you know, make a gourmet meal, you have to have gourmet ingredients. And in the world of football, that means you have to recruit top players with top talent. So, you know, we need to do those things. But, yeah, within the next 5 years, the ceiling is a championship. And let me say that that is not necessarily my expectation right now in 2017 or even 2018. But it would not surprise me if in any season between now and whenever Mark Richt leaves the University of Miami, it would not really surprise me if Miami found a way to get back to a championship level, because we have the talent base. Obviously, we have top-tier coaching now. You know, we have players who hopefully want to be successful, because you don't want to hear about losing to Florida State. You don't want to hear about losing to LSU in the opener in 2018. My holy God, there's no way we can lose to Florida in 2019, because they're the worst out of anybody. So, I mean, you want to win those games and you want to spin it forward. So the ceiling for Miami, because of our proximity to elite recruits, because of the tradition of this program, even though it's a microwave program in that we've only been good since really 1980, as opposed to some of these programs, Florida State, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, who have a history that they can look back into the annals and they say, hey, back, you remember in 1912 or 19, we don't have that kind of history, but in the history that we have, it's been elite. So for me, if we do what we need to do, get a little bit lucky, win some tough games and recruit to the level where I think we can, the ceiling is a championship and it's up to the guys to get there.
Man, I'm not even a Miami fan, and I'm fired up to watch how this season plays out for them. And if you guys want to follow anything going on in Miami and what happens in spring ball and then heading in to the next season, I would highly recommend that you go to stateoftheu.com. And if you want to follow them on Twitter, you can do so at stateoftheu. And then if you want
it's the State of the U on Twitter.
The State of the U on Twitter, my bad. And then if you want to follow Cam, you can do so at Underwood Sports. He is the managing editor. He's up on all things college football, recruiting, ACC, all that good stuff. I would highly recommend both of them. And Cam, I really appreciate you dropping knowledge on Miami and getting me pumped up, even though you're a Michigan fan too, but that's all right. I'm good.
Yeah, you know, I saw the email. You were like, hey, you want to come on Grand, you know, a Land Grant podcast? I was like, I don't know about that. But no, it was a good time. You know, I'm always down to talk some Miami Hurricanes. So yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. And like I said, we cover all of the sports. So right now, embroiled in chasing an NCAA berth, which we should have already with 20 wins. Got baseball season about to have first pitch of a game today. So for all your Miami Hurricanes needs, whether it's football, basketball, recruiting, or other, see us over at stateoftheu.com and see if you don't find something you love.
Do it. Miami fan or not, it is highly worth your time. Cam, I appreciate you joining the show, man. Thank you.
No problem, Colton. Anytime, brother.
I'm hurt, dog. Don't ask me if I'm all right. Hell no. Joaquin said dominate, and we not doing it. I'm putting my heart in this, dog. Let's go, man.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Big shout out to Ed Reed, as always, one of the greatest of all time, not only in college football, but also in the NFL too, and a great Miami Hurricane. So love that audio drop, one of my favorite clips. Shout out to Cam Underwood as well for joining the show. Want to mention again, if you want to follow him on Twitter, check out all his work. You can do so at Underwood Sports. And then if you want to visit State of the U, you can do so at stateoftheu.com and on Twitter at the State of the U. That's pretty much it for this episode. Really enjoyed this one. Hope you guys did as well. And if you did and you're a fan of college football and you have friends who are fans of college football, please, by all means, refer them to this podcast. Go out on iTunes, search Two Stripes Podcast. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of the Two Stripes Podcast. And be sure to leave a star rating, leave a review, leave me feedback, comments, questions, concerns, anything that I can do to make this show better. And then you can also go to soundcloud.com/twostripespod if you want to listen from your computer or download from there. You can do that as well. That'll wrap up this week's show, though. Hope you all enjoyed listening. Hope you all have a very good weekend. Be on the lookout for a new episode of the Two Stripes Podcast next week, probably around Tuesday or Wednesday. And most of y'all know that I'm an Ohio State fan, but unfortunately, we may be taking a trip to the Big Ten. But I think you guys will enjoy it. That'll do it for me, though. Want to thank you all for listening. My name is Colton Denning, and this has been the Two Stripes Podcast.